A Heavy Weight is intended for mature audiences. This series discusses topics that may be triggering to some listeners, such as suicide and drug use. Some names in this series have been changed to protect identities. Views expressed by guests on this series are their own and may not reflect my own. Resources and source materials can be found on our website, aheavyweight.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't yet listened to episodes 1 and 2, stop here and start at the beginning. A Heavy Weight is the story of the unexplained disappearance of Joseph Smedley. Last week, we wrapped up the episode a few days after Joseph was reported missing. He had seemingly vanished into thin air sometime after leaving his home, which he shared with two of his fraternity brothers late the night of Sunday, September 27th. No one had seen or heard from the 20-year-old Indiana University student since. Joseph's sister Vivian had been in Bloomington all week, searching for anything that might lead her closer to finding her brother.
I've done my own, work and spoke to probably about 20 people individually. Everyone thought it was just so weird that, they'd seen him within the last 48 hours, totally fine, happy.
Vivian spoke to Rebecca Schmiel, the detective assigned to Joseph's case, who told her that the department was keeping an eye on Joseph's bank account and pulling surveillance from around town.
Yeah, they checked his bank, and she said she was able to get, the last five or six transactions. Nothing, no withdrawals.
The department had also been able to verify some of the last pings from Joseph's cell phone.
It just was more confusing than anything. So we knew 6 and Walnut. That's why we met there.
IUPD confirmed that one of Joseph's last cell phone pings was near 7th Street and Walnut Street. Not 6th and Walnut Street, as Vivian mentions in our interview.
And then they said there was a data ping off of, State Route 137, which is way far on the other side of where we were. So it was just weird because, just the locations didn't really add up. And I've never really been to Bloomington before all of this.
Since Vivian wasn't from Bloomington, she wasn't familiar with the city's geography. For reference, Old State Road 37 is about 3.5 miles from 7th Street and Walnut Street. It's an 8-minute drive or more than an hour walk. You can see a map of the approximate times and locations of Joseph's last cell phone pings on our website and our Instagram account to get a better picture of the area. The corner of 7th and Walnut is the center of downtown, while Old State Road 37 is a quiet, remote area of the city, mostly consisting of some small rural neighborhoods, woods, hiking trails, and Griffey Lake. But sometime between 11 p.m. Sunday night and 7 a.m. Monday morning, Joseph's phone pinged at both locations. Vivian was left wondering what could have led Joseph to those locations that night. Hoping they might be able to shed some light on her brother's cell phone pings, Vivian shared these locations with Joseph's fraternity brothers. When she met with them in the days following her brother's disappearance, the Sig Pi brothers pulled up 7th and Walnut on a map. They explained that they thought it was near a bus station and suggested that maybe Joseph had taken a bus out of town. There is no bus station at 7th and Walnut, just a local bus stop whose route stays within the city limits. There's a popular bar on the corner and several more restaurants and bars just a few blocks away. This is the last place you would go to if you were planning a getaway. It is a place to meet up with friends for a night out. And the area is likely a part of Bloomington that every IU student is familiar with. It's where all of the most popular student bars are located. When I first learned 7th and Walnut was one of the last areas Joseph's phone pinged, I immediately pictured him going to meet up with friends. He could have easily walked from his house on Mitchell Street. I find it interesting that the Sigpi brothers suggest that Joseph was catching a bus out of town rather than going out to the bar. It just doesn't seem like a logical explanation. The cell phone pings become increasingly important as Joseph's story progresses, and considering the locations, the times of the pings, and the fact that he didn't have a working car at the time, it seems highly unlikely that Joseph was alone. For now, what you need to remember is this. The cell phone pings are pretty far apart, and the sequence of the locations is strange. They give us an approximate timeline of where Joseph's phone was and what direction he could have been moving. It would have been impossible for Joseph to have walked to each place within that time frame. Given this new information, Vivian was frustrated that IUPD detectives were still sticking with the theory that Joseph had just fled.
So they're like, okay, he probably just left. I mean, since you have a text message and a note that says, I left the country, that's probably what happened. But I'm like, no, he doesn't have a passport. He doesn't know where to go.
Despite Vivian's frustration with IUPD in this regard, she appreciated Detective Schmiel's responsiveness.
She was in constant communication with me. She always answered her phone. You know, I was always able to get in touch with her, you know, ask her questions. She'd share pretty much anything that she found out on her end with me, and so that was great.
Joseph's fraternity brothers were not as forthcoming. Vivian still didn't feel like she was getting straight answers, and the group chat she'd found on her brother's laptop was still bothering her. So after she talked to the Sigpi brothers on Wednesday, she continued her investigation by tracking down more of her brother's friends. But time and time again, everyone she spoke with continued to suggest that Joseph just left in the night. Yet no one was able to say how, with whom, or where he might have been going. It didn't make any sense to Vivian. Not only was this completely out of character for Joseph, but there also wasn't any indication that something was amiss or out of the ordinary the night he disappeared.
Yeah, like I literally talked to him the night before.
Yeah.
And he was studying. So, I mean, there's just no red flags. On top of that, like he's making plans with, you know, friends. He would reach out to a girl about a party the following Thursday. He was talking to a girl that night about, you know, a party that was happening at the frat house.
And Jess agreed.
From my recollections, he hadn't paid Viv back for the rent or whatever. Like, he would have paid it. Like, if that was his plan, like, he wouldn't have, like, left her in a bad situation.
In the first few days following Joseph's disappearance, Vivian was overwhelmed with all of the information that came in from her social media posts. There were a lot of rumors forming, and she didn't know what was true and what was just speculation. Many of Joseph's friends got in touch with her as soon as they found out he was missing. They gave her information they felt might be helpful, but she didn't have any way to verify these tips, and they didn't bring her any closer to finding her brother. One example of this came in the form of a phone call from another one of her brother's friends.
Me and my roommates were friends with Joe. We were told that Joe kind of just packed a bag and then grabbed, like, some of his personal belongings and kind of just left.
A lot of the information Vivian received was hearsay. So-and-so heard it from someone who heard it from someone else. Without any way of knowing what was true, she checked in with IUPD detectives as often as she could. But the department was running their own investigation, and Detective Schmiel was careful not to give credence to rumors.
I think she was really careful with, like, what she wanted, like, her own opinions.
Vivian couldn't confirm if Joseph had taken a backpack with him when he left, but she knew that if he had, he hadn't taken much with him. And if he had packed a bag, did his roommates know? Did they see Joseph do it? Did they talk to him before he left? Vivian wasn't getting much from Josh and Ryan, who still maintained that they hadn't seen or heard from Joseph after going to bed Sunday night. Calls, texts, and messages kept coming in, and later that week, Joseph's good friend Jess called Vivian back. She'd wanted to say more in her first conversation with Vivian, but she couldn't because her mom had been with her during the call. So she called Vivian a second time, when she was alone, and what she shared was alarming.
Okay, so this, I think it was near the beginning of this summer, Joe had mentioned to me that he wanted to make DMT, because I'd never heard of it before, but I guess it's some, like, I think it's a kind of hallucinogen or something. Mm-hmm. But he said he knew how to make it, and had asked her if she wanted to do it with him, if she wanted to, like, trip with him, and she said maybe, and his response was, okay, I'll put you on the maybe list.
When Jess first heard this at the beginning of the summer, just a few months before Joseph's disappearance, she didn't think much of it. But now that Joseph was missing, she thought it might be an important clue. While Vivian knew that her brother smoked pot, she had never known for him to take DMT, let alone manufacture it. DMT is a powerful drug. It is considered to be one of the most potent psychedelics available. While it is illegal, it occurs naturally in some plants, like Mimosa hostilis, a root bark that you can legally purchase in the United States as a dyeing agent. If someone wanted to manufacture DMT, they wouldn't necessarily need a chemistry background. Even so, Joseph did have a background in chemistry and studied pharmaceuticals. It was his main field of interest, with the goal that he could one day create life-saving medications. In my brief online research, simply searching how to make DMT instantly turned up a wealth of detailed instructions. Could Joseph have been manufacturing DMT? Was that tied to the pill bottles allegedly found in his room? Could it be a clue as to why he disappeared? This is something we'll circle back to, but the possibility that her brother was manufacturing drugs wasn't the only thing that Jess wanted to share with Vivian.
I mean, do you think something happened on Sunday? I mean, what's out of the norm for you, the fact that anything that you've heard as far as him on Sunday?
Well, told me about how he found that note.
The name in the interview was obscured to hide the true identity of one of Joseph's roommates, the person we've been referring to as Josh. The note that Jess is referring to here is not the note found on Joseph's bed. It's an entirely different note, one that was allegedly found by Joseph in the weeks leading up to his disappearance.
That note that said, something about he was seen on camera and to stop looking through their things.
Yeah.
You heard about that, right?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Well, that alone is really concerning. It makes it seem like someone was, after him or something.
During their conversation, Jess and Vivian compared what they'd been hearing from Sigma Pi Brothers over the past few days.
And then the whole Scotch bottle, you know about that bottle, right?
Yeah.
That he was saving up for his wedding.
This part gets a little confusing, so let me try to explain. Jess mentions this new cryptic note, and then she goes on to tell Vivian about yet another note, a third note. This third note was allegedly left in place of Joseph's prized bottle of scotch. Joseph's bottle of scotch was something both Vivian and Jess knew about. It held a lot of sentimental value for Joseph. He was saving the bottle for when he got married. It wasn't something he would have easily parted with.
Yeah, he drank it last week, right? Like the week before?
I never heard he drank it. I never thought he drank it. Did he?
I mean, that's as far as I had heard that Joseph would drink it and then
Okay. I didn't know that he had drank it. I thought he was like, he never would have drank that.
Oh, and okay. Then
there was a note in the box that the scotch was in that said, "Will return."
During one of her previous conversations with Joseph's fraternity brothers, Vivian had heard that the bottle of scotch was missing. She was told that her brother drank it. But this was news to Jess. To her, it didn't sound like something Joseph would have done. Although it may not seem relevant now, the third note, found in place of the missing scotch bottle, is another detail that becomes important as the investigation into Joseph's disappearance continues. So now Vivian knew about three different notes, each one of them a potentially important clue. First, there was the note found on Joseph's bed the day following his disappearance. The note was supposedly written by Joseph, saying he was leaving the country. Then there was the cryptic note allegedly found by Joseph prior to his disappearance, warning him to stay away from something. And finally, there was the puzzling note left in place of his scotch bottle, saying, "Will return." What could it all mean?
Yeah, I know. Like, do you have some type of scenario that you think might have happened? Like, what are you thinking?
Well, the only thing I can think of is that maybe he found some information out that somebody didn't want him to know, and they were after him because of that note.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's making me think that
right.
could have been the case.
Do you know, like...
It just doesn't seem like he did this.
Do you know who would be after him?
Jess told Vivian she couldn't think of anyone who could be after Joseph or would want to hurt him in any way. Their conversation stayed with Vivian. Something felt off. Since she still had access to Joseph's laptop computer, she decided to look through it again. She read through the group chat she'd found, the one between Joseph's fraternity brothers, hoping to discover something helpful, since the chat was still active after her brother's disappearance. What you're about to hear is a recorded reenactment of portions of the group chat found by Vivian on Joseph's laptop computer. The names have been changed to protect identities. Although the conversation is between Sigma Pi brothers, you'll also hear a female voice. Oftentimes, a fraternity will elect a female to represent them throughout the year, and this person is known as the fraternity sweetheart. The Sigma Pi sweetheart was present in the group chat. The portion of the chat that you're about to hear took place over the first few days immediately following Joseph's disappearance, from Monday, September 28th to Wednesday, September 30th. Before Joseph's disappearance, the group chat was nothing more than typical college students talking about parties and fraternity news. But by Monday, the conversation had completely shifted its focus to Joseph. While some chat members used their real names as their handles, most of them used made-up IDs, so it wasn't possible for Vivian to decipher which of her brother's friends were saying what. What she read was pretty disturbing. Monday, September 28th, the first day Joseph was missing.
"I know this is messed up, but Mitch asked me to make sure you guys understand that if there's anything bad that happened, Smedley is not officially a brother of Sigma Pi on the roster, and not to say anything like that to the police or people on campus."
The chat continued after IUPD detectives stopped by the Mitchell Street house that Monday.
"Guys, the police were just at our house questioning us. This is 100% not a joke. We need to find Smedley."
"When was the last time you saw him? Is there an arrest warrant or anything, or is he just straight up missing?"
"What are the police asking you? More information would be helpful."
"Straight up missing. His sister in Indy filed a missing report."
"Was he with his sister last night? Why does it matter if he's in Sig Pi? The cops were already at our house, and they aren't dumb.
I'm just saying, lying about him being a SigPi doesn't really matter.
Yeah, Mitch is an idiot for that.
Yeah, obviously. They know he's in SigPi, but who cares if he is or not? We wouldn't get in trouble.
Yeah, why would we get in trouble?
Tuesday morning, the chat addressed the note found in Joseph's room, allegedly written by him and left on his bed. For reference, the note read, "Had to leave country. Don't try to contact me via cell. It won't work. Will contact you once set up overseas." It was signed Smedley and dated Monday, September 28th. One of Joseph's roommates alerted the group that he'd found the note.
When was that?
I believe the message was left Monday morning on his bed. The three of us went to bed all at the same time on Sunday, then found the note after getting back late last night from the house, so it's been 24 hours.
What did the police ask or say to you?
They asked us when we had seen him last, if anyone was looking for him, stuff like that. Whether his mood had been different recently or what.
He hasn't been around much, to the house at least.
We need to treat this like he can't be found, because as of now, he's missing. So please don't joke around about this. It's not funny.
No one is joking. You and Mitch are concerned with drugs. It's not drugs. Who cares about you and your weed? It's not relevant to him missing.
No one is joking or thinking it's funny. The last thing we need is people to start freaking out on other people and making tension.
I think he's probably fine, guys. He's a smart kid.
Any information would be helpful if you saw him Sunday or Monday.
He seemed normal last time I saw him.
I just contacted a girl he was with Saturday.
I saw him around 2 p.m. on Sunday. Stopped by, watched football for a few, then left.
Can't they track his phone or something?
His phone is off.
Doesn't his mom live in the Virgin Islands? Maybe he left the country, but why wouldn't his sister go with?
If he left a note, I think he's fine. If he wanted to tell us, he would have. Trying to figure out why isn't going to help to figure out where he is.
When there are cops at the house and Mitch is freaking out, we have to at least let them know he's not hurt.
I know, but asking why he would go somewhere isn't going to help. And it's not a drug thing, so tell Mitch to stop saying that.
The conversation continued late into the night Tuesday and picked back up again on Wednesday. No one had heard anything from Joseph since Sunday night.
I want Smedley back.
I agree, but he can leave his attitude wherever he is and come back with a better one. I can't wait till he sends us a pic of him on beach in, like, Haiti, drinking a Corona.
Do not make jokes about this. It's just really not a laughing matter at this point.
Hey, was that moving company you guys worked for sketchy at all?
I don't know who he was talking to. There were different workers early summer.
I'll tell you guys right now, I've done 10 times a better job than those mall cops that call themselves BPD. All the evidence in his room was found by myself and his brother-in-law. I do know that the last pinged location on his phone was college, near the Greyhound bus station. They're pulling video surveillance footage from around town already.
By Wednesday evening, IUPD had returned and searched the Mitchell Street house again. They'd also been by the official Sigma Pi fraternity house. Joseph's fraternity brother refers to the Bloomington Police Department, BPD, but at this point, IUPD was still leading the investigation. The searches at the SigPi house and the Mitchell Street house unsettled the fraternity brothers, and the idea of Joseph not being on the SigPi roster was brought up again in the group chat.
Guys, just know that some shit we really didn't want to know might come to the surface about this kid. Just brace yourself.
There's talk throughout the chat, alluding to something unsavory about Joseph coming to light, but nothing more specific than that is ever said.
Like on the news?
Is there anything Sigma Pi needs to be prepared for?
Considering we haven't been mentioned in one article yet, I think the house is okay.
No, Smedley isn't even an active member and hasn't been one since spring due to GPA.
Wait, you're saying that in a police report?
He may have been involved in things we don't know about. That's all I'm going to say right now, because anything past that is speculation.
Why can't you tell us?
Because I don't know anything.
I'm not calling you out, but there's a lot that was said at that meeting last night. If you know something and can't tell us, just say that.
For real, though, we need to delete this group message just in case the cops check it. There's a lot of house talk in here that could be really bad for Sigma. This could be a little cautious, but I've been busted by cops before.
You can't. It's all saved on a server.
Well, the cops won't be that diligent. We just need to make sure they can't get it on Smed's phone.
I'm betting Smed's destroyed his phone on some stuff.
It's something so small and simple that could really save us. I mean, I don't care. I have nothing to hide on this, but this is just what's best for the house. Textbook risk management, know what I mean?
Is he wanted for charges or just missing? I'm sure this has been addressed. I'm just curious.
He is legal. When he was getting an apartment, they ran a background check on him. It's not anything he's legally running away from if he could submit to a background check, so that's not a good explanation.
There's just so much speculation.
The detective hasn't found anything yet.
If his family wants to make this public, it's about them, not us.
Cops are at the house, so don't be stupid, boys.
Someone delete this group.
Smedley made it.
Should we all leave?
Yeah. Because if they see our nicknames that are left, they won't be able to see our profiles and real names. Bye.
I never changed my name, though.
B just got a call from the cops and got interrogated. I never changed my name either.
The last line of the conversation was what really caught Vivian's attention.
You guys understand leaving the group doesn't absolve you of anything, right?
On the next episode, we'll dig deeper into the group chat as the search for Joseph comes to a head with a turn of events that no one could have imagined. But that's next time on A Heavy Weight.
I just thought it was really strange that, like, all these, I mean, it was a ton of cop cars. They all had their lights on. They were speeding like crazy.
He never said anything like that to me, which is news to me, and that's really surprising.
She's saying that not that many people know about it, you know, so it has to be some sort of secret little place.
That just, to me, proved more that they knew that it was happening, because we didn't even know it was happening.
Heavy Weight is written, produced, and hosted by me, Stacey Brodovsky. Edited and engineered by Joseph Caldwell. Additional editing, music, and sound design by Mike Brodovsky.